Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Monday. Monday, January, whatever the day is. January 24th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17, almost 18 years now. To improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. On that website, on that page, you can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click on the link, download it, copy it off, print it as much as you want, and use it for free. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have called in and either been stepped through the worksheet process or given powerful testimonials about how the use of these tools has improved their quality of their life. And you can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. And if you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope you do that soon and often, because that frequently leads to comments or questions or testimonials that you might want to share with us. If you have any of those, give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1 on your phone. That'll put a little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I will turn on your microphone and announce you by your area code. So this year, following up on last year's working through the Course in Miracles lessons, the workbook lessons, this year we're going through the Way of Mastery. And the Way of Mastery is another tool, just like the Course in Miracles, that was given to us over a period of years from 1994 to 1997, and it was basically just dictated, and then later on transcribed into what has now become the Way of Mastery. Originally, it was intended to be three books, the Way of the Heart, the Way of Transformation, and the Way of Knowing. But the foundation, in its wisdom, decided to publish all three books together as a big blue book titled The Way of Mastery. And that's how I came into contact with it at first. And the gentleman that did that speaking of this content, did that connection between this higher consciousness and our conscious logical realm, his name was John Mark Hammer, and now he goes by the name JM. And he was doing a blog post years ago. Maintaining a blog years ago, and someone wrote and asked him, what about these differences between Course in Miracles? This was back in 2010. Somebody asked him, what's the difference between A Course in Miracles and The Way of Mastery, and where do they conflict? And he wrote a very thoughtful response, and I wanted to share some of that. Since we're right here at the beginning of this work, and we just finished doing A Course in Miracles, which a lot of people love. I suppose it's fair to say a lot of people love to hate. And the student recently asked, what is the difference between A Course in Miracles and The Way of Mastery, and where do they conflict? And JM writes, first, perceived conflict. When looking upon teachings that come from the very highest levels of wisdom, the conflict is not in the teachings themselves, but the conflict reveals the current limit of our own awareness, our own limits on our awareness. Now, having said that, let me begin by sharing a critical, universal truth that all seeking awakening must begin with. This is the way Yeshua put it to me many years ago. Teaching is an art and not a science. All forms of teaching serve to sever the mind or soul from its infatuation with the illusions it has generated and entered into. The wise teacher speaks the language of the student and then leads them beyond the very limits that they do not know imprison them. In that way, both A Course in Miracles and The Way of Mastery are expressions of this teaching art aimed at reaching downward into the labyrinth of where students are and providing ways and means to enter, and depending upon their devotion, desire, and commitment of the student, to move through the process of enlightenment. JM says, I am not a Course in Miracles student. I am a disciple of Yeshua, who is the master teacher in charge of the atonement. He has selectively led me to small segments of the Course in Miracles, and as far as I can tell, there is no conflict at all if one goes far enough into the enlightenment process. I've had many, many Course students come to me and to The Way of Mastery who frankly seem to be suffering in, he puts in quotes here, the word stuckness. It appears that they get stuck in a purely mental approach to waking. And this is a very common malaise that can occur if one doesn't have access to teachers who have themselves gone beyond the level of the purely mental intellectual understanding. For those teachers will be limited to meeting the student's deeper obstructions with little more than a recourse to ideas and statements about reality, but that don't necessarily have the skillful art that can operate at the deep, subtle levels of the soul itself. And those teachers may not even know how to seduce the mind out of its ruts of thinking and perceiving. So in a nutshell, some students, following the lead of some A Course in Miracles teachers, say the body and the world are simply unreal, he puts in parentheses, there is a sense in which this is true, close parens. And once they make that assumption, they tend to discount feeling, breath work, and any need to participate in growing one's capacity to serve others. He says, personally, I know that the phase of awakening, I know that as a phase of awakening, myself, personally. And it's actually found in many forms of spirituality around the world. Unfortunately, it can be a clever way to avoid any real ownership of egoic patterns, as well as submission to real transformation. So I can stay stuck in thought and the words and cleverly argue at an intellectual level about either what I find in the Course in Miracles or the Way of Mastery, but if I do that, I avoid any real ownership of my own egoic patterns, and I avoid submitting to the process of transformation. Seeing the unreality of world, self, and purpose of creation is actually just a first step, as extraordinary as it may seem. What is often missed is the overall context of A Course in Miracles and a lack of understanding of where it fits along the spectrum of awakening and noticing and understanding the audience it relates to. There are certainly passages in it that reveal what comes once the radical correction in what I call the seat of the soul, once that radical correction in the seat of the soul is truly completed. The correction, by the way, has already been mapped out and described in certain universal pathways and has been already spoken of by countless mystics and masters. Here, we'll just call it non-duality. There is a radical and absolute reconciliation between what seems to be the duality of spirit and matter, eternity and time, God and self, form and formlessness, without falling into the temptation to explain all realms of form and explain them away. Many Course in Miracles students have found their way beyond this first step and gone on to share and teach from deeper levels. For example, Brett Haskell's Journey Beyond Words is one example. Marianne Williamson's work can hardly be said to be limited by this first step in waking. Rather, she models a much deeper level, which we find permeates the Way of Mastery. And the pathway Yeshua has led me to go through and develop for others over the past 20 years, which he calls servantship. This is being moved by such compassion that one's whole life is submitted to personal transformation, to process revealing revelation, insight, and capacity to unfold creation. And all of this is not available at the limited level of thought and concept. One way to think that I think of to show the broad stages of genuine awakening is to borrow Rama Maharshi's famous mystical syllogism. Here we can see three distinct domains of consciousness and gain some insight into what some students of A Course in Miracles and some teachers may be doing with it and why. A Course in Miracles, as it tends to get interpreted in what I feel is a bit unfair to the Course in Miracles itself, A Course in Miracles would say the first domain stated by Rama is Brahma, Brahman, reality slash God, Brahman alone is real. The world is illusion. An absolute dualism and not uncommon in world spiritual traditions to certain stages of development. Note, this is just the first step to enlightenment. And then, Brahmana takes the shocking leap that requires stages of awakening beyond the levels of mind dealing with basic operations, and that is to use reason to defeat our ideas about ourselves and point to higher possibilities. But a spiritual journey is not about ideas and words. It is about becoming the living word, which is about a quality of being that in the end really can't be contained in any teaching device, and that includes the Course in Miracles and the Way of Mastery. So what we're after here is to dive into the words as a teaching tool to help us usher ourselves into an experience of life that's radically different. We have that capacity. We, being everyone who has consciousness, has been given a tool or a set of tools within their own ability to be awake and aware, with which, whether they realize it or not, each and every one of us creates our own experience. And that brings us to lesson two in the Way of Mastery, titled, You Create Your Own Experience. That lesson begins with the following words. It is with great joy that I come forth to abide with you. It is a great truth that I come often unto many. But because of what you have learned in your world, you have often believed me to be a figment of your imagination. The voice that steals quietly through the space between your own thoughts, that voice that you think to be but an illusion. Yet I say I come often unto many. I come not alone to communicate with you. There is in truth a host of friends that come to create a vortex, a circumference of energy, and we come even as you hear these words. We come into your space to set that tone. If you would well receive it, there are many friends unseen by physical eyes that have come forth to contribute to and to support this communication. Why is that important? As always, in each and every moment of your experience, you as a soul, as a divine spark of consciousness, you are deliberately choosing to create forms of communication. You do it with a raiment that you put upon the body. You do it with the gestures and the sound of your voice. You do it with the very culture and the time frame in which you incarnate. You are constantly and only creating forms through which you can communicate. Communication is the attempt to rest in communion with creation. What you are choosing to perceive, believe, and accept as true will be radiated through you and through your communication devices. This includes the body. And this is done so that you might transfer your perceptions to another, that they might know who you are and which voice you are committed to. I have often said that the body is a teaching and learning device, and all forms of communication affect the process of teaching and learning. When you arise in the morning, the first thought that makes a home in your mind, you will take an action on it. You may stretch the body, you may smile, you may frown. You might be filled with peace, or you might feel the weight of the world. These things come not because you have perceived them outside of you, but because you have allowed them inside into the depth of your consciousness that remains pure and undefiled and radiant beyond all boundaries forever. As that thought makes a home in your mind, you literally begin to transform the communication device called the body into that which carries, expresses, and reflects what has come to make a home in your mind. Remember, please, that the mind is not where the body is. It does not abide within the body, but the body does abide within the field of your mind. Communication is creation. These are two, and they are one and the same thing. Therefore, if you would create well, ask only this: what am I committed to communicating? What will my creations express? What will my creations convey to others? For whatever I seek to convey reveals what I believe is the truth of myself and revealing it to the world. Therefore, beloved friends, as we begin to focus on, to refine, to deepen, and to mature in the way of the heart, it is wise to begin at the beginning. The beginning of this pathway is simply this: you are as God has created you to be. You are an infinite focus of consciousness. Your very sense of existence is nothing more than a feedback loop or a feedback mechanism so that you can witness the effects of the choices you are making in the very deep, deep depth of your mind that rests right alongside the mind of God. Therefore, in each moment of your existence, which includes this bodily incarnation, you are literally allowing, through deliberate choice, though perhaps unconscious, you are allowing to bring forth a vibration or thought of a vibration of creation and to communicate it with the world in an attempt to experience communion with all of life, with a friend, with a parent, with a child, with a beloved, with the clouds that pass through the sky, or with the earth itself. Each gesture, each thought, the way the body breathes, all of these things are going on constantly, and they are communicating or revealing the effect of what you have allowed to make a home in your mind. Understand well, the way of the heart requires that you allow yourself to rest in the simplicity of the following truth: I am pure spirit, undefiled and unaffected by anything or anyone. I am given full power to choose and therefore to create my experience as I would have it be. Not the I that is the egoic part of the mind, for that is just one of your creations, and that came along somewhere down the line. It is a very small part of your mind. We are speaking of the I of you that is pure spirit, that part of you that knows it exists, even though it does not know the time of its own creation. You are pure spirit. Therefore, we would have you know, quote, I am only this, and in each moment, regardless of what I believe I see, regardless of the feelings that arise within my awareness, I and I alone am wholly 100% responsible for them. No one has caused them. No great force in the universe has made this perception well up within my consciousness. I have selected it. I am as God created me to be. And I could ask myself with each new present moment, What am I committed to communicating? What will my creations of thought, word, and actions express? What will my creations of thoughts, words, and actions convey to others? For whatever I seek to convey reveals to everyone around me what I believe is the truth of myself to the world. The beginning of this pathway is simply this. You are as the Creator created you to be. You are an infinite focus of that conscious awareness. Your very sense of existence is nothing more than a feedback loop or a feedback mechanism so that you can witness the effects of the choices you are making. Where are those choices being made? They're being made in the deep, deep depth of your mind that rests right alongside the mind of God. It is being made at the deepest levels of consciousness and awareness. So, those are my offerings for today, 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, let us know your thoughts. Let us know what this is resonating for you, good, bad, or otherwise. 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1. We have writings from JM in response to a reader, a student, a follower of Course in Miracles and or Way of Mastery who was asking about perceived conflicts between the two, and a blog post that JM wrote about 12 years ago, 11 and a half, and the beginning couple of pages of Lesson 2 from The Way of Mastery. So what are your offerings? What are your thoughts? What have you gotten so far from the readings, slow, methodical reading and discussion about Lesson 1? 563-999-3581. What are you doing to help yourself have an experience of yourself or your life that is different than what you've had all these decades of your life on the planet? I'm assuming that we don't have anybody who's in their 20s listening, so that most people are, 30 or 40 years into their life before they find a spiritual path like this and actually start working with it. Some would say diving in. So what's your experience so far of exploring and massaging the message from Lesson 1 in The Way of Mastery? I should mention that over the weekend I was doing some work trying to get a handle on a lot of different projects, and one of them is that this Wednesday I'm going to be on a panel discussing trauma with Dr. David Grand, who wrote the book Brain Spotting. And that's from, I guess it's from 6 to 7:30 on Wednesday evening. And the other thing is that I've had the request to make available my readings of the Way of Mastery. So I think I got as far as the first book, The Way of the Heart. I think I have the first 12 lessons that have now been uploaded to the website at mindshiftersacademy.org. And I attempted to write a blog post to that effect, and there's all kinds of technical difficulties involved with writing that blog post and then getting it sent out. But I'm working on it. And so now if you go to mindshiftersacademy.org, along with audio files of several shows where people have been stepped through the worksheet process and testimonials about this work, there's also a page that says The Way of Mastery audio files. And now that has, to the best of my ability, it's got the first 12 lessons uploaded so that you can access them. You can go back, you can go forward. It's just in response to people requesting this. So 563-999-3581. And Susan, is this you?
It is. Dr. Tim, you know, you're going to be asking for comments, and this work is so amazing and delicious, but it's hard to make comments. One thing I want to say is, where did you say you got that material that you first read at the beginning about the difference? It was in response to a question, the difference between the Course in Miracles or something.
I've been following JM's work for a long time. And so he has had various locations, but his primary website for a lot of years now has been wayofmastery.com. So if you just go to your search engine and you type in JM, J-A-Y-E-M, and something about, you know, blog and comment from A Course in Miracles and Way of Mastery, then you'll pull up his blog. And from September 20th of 2010, he wrote this blog post in response to a question from one of his followers, listeners, whatever, students.
It's so good to hear that, because I, for one, as you know, I go and try to figure things out. And this is like, once you've gotten something, or you think you've gotten it, then it pries it all up again, and you're left free to come back to yourself, really. I had a weird, weird experience this past weekend where a therapist friend of mine who's learning about family constellations from a very different approach hopes to be teaching it and is offering two-hour sessions once a month free for those of us who want to come on and do that work. And she admittedly is a student of it herself. And I, for one, was just tied in knots because I could tell she felt a tremendous amount of pressure to present it the right way and do what this man who teaches it does. And if any of her students, and there were only three or four of us on there, said something that didn't fit what was the expected or wanted answer, she'd say, "Oh, no, we don't do that. We do this." And I felt as if my intuitive and free-flowing capacities were shutting their doors, bang, one by one. And so I decided to just close my eyes and breathe and come back to myself and sit quietly, whereupon she said, "Oh, no, we do this work with our eyes open. Everybody, I want your eyes open." And one of us was from a distance and had trouble with a video connection, so she was only on audio. And she was told by this leader to please turn on her video. And the woman did, but then the connection was terrible, and there was a lot of echoing and crackling and funny noises. And finally she just dropped off, which is sort of symbolic of the way I felt. I thought if I had my druthers, I would simply step back and not do this right now. It was so uncomfortable. And yet I was thinking about the Way of Mastery, and they say that we take full responsibility for how we are feeling. And so I thought, well, there are a lot of worksheets built into this. this is a great opportunity. And I also felt worried for my friend, the teacher. I was all over the place. I certainly wasn't doing what the aim of the work was. But hearing what you read is like addressing exactly what was happening, is nobody has it in the exclusion of anyone else. And every time we get something, we'll read it again and find out we are getting it in a different way the next time. So, man, I don't know what's happening, but it was just perfect to hear you read that. And I would love to read it to this friend, although there are reasons why I wouldn't, just because, you know, I'm afraid she'll feel criticized and corrected and all sorts of other things. But so, you know, I'm giving you all this mess of feedback, but it's pretty much a blunderbuss, very imprecise, but I just love what you're picking to read.
Well, I'm glad. And, you know, this is the thing. We're working with this sense of ourself, right? We're limited in the sense that we only have language to work with. We only have what our parents and culture have taught us. And when mm-hmm. we are really, truly in the presence of a masterful teacher, he or she will try to help us crack out of that eggshell, you might call it.
Yeah.
And yet a teacher can't help us do that unless he or she has already acknowledged, seen, and begun to crack through their own shell. Because whatever they give us that isn't, you know, having seen their own limitations and cracked through them, whatever they give us is simply more of the rigidity that their mind was made to follow in order to have a sense of self.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, whenever you... So I'm drawn to a couple stories. One of them is at a point in my life where I had had tremendous upheaval. It had the divorce I didn't want, and with that, you know, usually comes all kinds of dramatic shifts in social networks and, you know, the usual things I would do to fill my time on the weekends. It was all gone because I'm not living in the home with my sons anymore, and we're not doing whatever we would normally do. So I decided to just explore different things, and that's how I ended up at the at a religious science group. They didn't have a church at the time. They were meeting in a motel meeting room, and every Sunday they had to set it up and then take it down. Well, I found out about this through one of my networking things, and I said, oh, that's right here in town, and I can go over there. And so I started going over just to hear what it's like, just to explore. And in the middle of that, fairly early on, there was a young man who was about as nervous as anyone I'd ever heard speak. His voice would shake and crack, and he seemed to be, you know, sweating, and the podium would shake. It was very difficult for me. And at that point in time, I was the executive director of a professional speaking group.
Mm.
So, you know, I'd long ago in high school and college worked through those kinds of fears myself and gained tools. And so it was... Emotionally, for me, it was very difficult for me to sit and listen. And yet, I was there to try and help, and I was there to try and support somebody who was a budding young, you know, individual and speaker. So I toughed it out, and it was really tough for me. It was like sitting on nails, chewing glass. It was very difficult. And
right.
I was in one of those church meetings, and they made the announcement. He came up and gave some kind of a talk, which was brutal. And they made the announcement that he was going to be leading a visualization class a la Michael Beckwith following the service. And all I could think of was, oh, my God, there's going to be no one there. This is so... So I helped pack up everything, and I stayed for it. And there were very few people there, and he was, you know, awkward and nervous. But, you know, he had been listening to Michael Beckwith, and he had the format down, and he suggested we go through these. And in the process of me toughing that out and quieting down all of the naysaying in my head, Tim, you should go have a donut, right? You should go see a movie. You should go out in the sunlight. You should get some fresh air on your bike. You don't need to be here. This is ridiculous. You're so far beyond this. I quieted all of that down, and I stayed, and I met a woman in that exchange of visualizing this or that who wanted to teach Reiki to families. And I said, oh, well, I've got the Parenting Power Struggle Handbook. Let me give you a copy of that. There's one in the car. And, you know, I work with families. And that, for about 15 years after that, became a solid friendship. And
nice.
This person was, you know, she's a singer-songwriter, and she's, you know, she's been a blessing at several times, and it's drifted away. But I mean, that was a gift, a major gem that only came because I was willing to calm the inner demons in me and sit with them and not try to take over the show and not try to say I'm better than this. And that's the kind of thing that happens. I believe that's the kind of thing that JM is referring to in this blog post, where he says, we've got to get past our thoughts about ourselves, right? We have to have the expansion that comes from working with teachings, not seeing ourselves as the teachings or as the teacher. Teaching is an art, not a science. And all forms of teaching serve to sever the mind or the soul from its infatuation with the illusions it has generated. And then it's entered into. Right? I think I'm better than this. I think I'm so much better speaker. I should be presenting and not this guy. I think I already know everything this guy would be teaching me. I should go ride my bike in the sunshine rather than sit here. I had to get past all of those illusions and infatuations with myself as this wonderful speaker and sit there to open myself to learn something new and to have an experience which, you know, it went on for years that I made connections with that group of people that were a blessing to many, myself and lots of others. But it says here that both the Course in Miracles and the Way of Mastery are expressions of teaching and in this artful way because they're aimed at reaching downward into the labyrinth of wherever the student is and providing ways and means to enter, and depending upon that student's desire, devotion, commitment, to help them move upwards through the release of those attachments in the process of enlightenment. So, yes, there are people like the one that you talked about, and when they start something like this, they're very rigid and mechanistic and for those of us who are so much better and so fluid in our presentation and, oh, we've got there's something for us to learn by quieting the negativity in our own minds and understanding, hey, look, isn't it great? Here's a person who's trying to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there too, not too very long ago. And I might, you know, in comparison to somebody else, this very day, I might be the novice compared to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And unless I can quiet down that part of my mind that thinks that I'm so much better and I'm so much smarter and I'm so much more polished, and unless I can quiet that part of my mind down, I assure myself of staying stuck right where I am. And my own growth is as limited as anybody else's in that moment.
Hmm. That reminds me of, I remember that in The Way of Mastery, there's a definition of forgiveness, and I went looking for it and found it, and it's only in lesson 3.
Yep.
But it was perfect for what I had just been through. And it's perfect for what you're talking about, too. And there's another layer of this. This particular person has been to many, many trainings and workshops and considers herself an expert. And she's constantly saying, I finally found it. This is it. Not that, but this. And I worked with her years ago when she worked family constellations in a very different way, and I got a lot out of it. But in this weekend thing, she was saying, oh, no, that isn't the right way. And so I'm also dealing with a person who's acting as if she's an authority and knows, and I'm having to rise beyond and above that and watching my reactions. At least, I mean, I'm playing one up here. Your person was obviously nervous and a novice, and you felt compassion. I felt like clobbering this woman, which was also my homework to do. It kept saying, you are responsible for your feelings. I'm saying, thanks a lot. Oh, but anyway, the forgiveness thing is, do you want me to read it? It's just one paragraph.
Oh, I was going to read it. I pulled it up here. It says, forgive means to choose to release another from the perceptions you have been projecting upon them. It is, therefore, an act of forgiving oneself, meaning in this ancient Aramaic definition of forgiveness, to dismantle one's projections. Mm-hmm. And as you begin to forgive and dismantle those projections, even 70 times, 7 times, each time you forgive or dismantle your projections, you take yourself deeper into the purity of your own consciousness. And you begin to see how profoundly you have been coloring and therefore affecting all of your relationships. And you've been doing it through the simple act of not being aware of the power of your own projection, the power mm-hmm. of your mind to create perception inaccurately, right? The power of your mind, as we talk about so often in this work that Dr. Michael Rice got from the Course in Miracles, and we find that the CIA has been researching it, and all kinds of psychologists have been researching perception. Anil Seth has a video on perception about how we are all hallucinating our perception. We are mm-hmm. creating pictures in our minds without knowing it. And we live in a culture that's trained us to believe that our pictures are accurate. Never mm-hmm. mind the fact that there could be 17 other people standing right next to us, all looking at the same thing, coming up with a different picture. We think ours mm-hmm. is the right picture. We think we have the accurate perception. And mm-hmm. that's why, you know, the Way of Mastery and its definition, to my eye and ear, its definition of forgiveness is identical to the Course in Miracles and the Michael Rice work with the Kabbalist Manuscript. It's about dismantling false perceptions. And when we understand that whenever we have an upset, a negative emotion going on, it's a creation of our own mind, and it is because of that active energy in our system, it is distorting our perception. And we are not seeing clearly whenever we're upset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dr. Tim, I love it when you say, this has enhanced my life and most of my relationships. You don't say all of them. And so there's that margin of just the I don't know area, the area that you can't explain. You just have to allow it to be what it is, but it doesn't meet some kind of a goal. Or if you want to say something about that, I have just been appreciating the fact that you don't say all your relationships, because you leave room for something, some slippage or something, which is very revealing.
Well, it's absolutely the case that as I work on myself, and I think I've got tools, and I think I know if everybody used them, they would all be better off. And it's absolutely the case that there have been people in my life who have cut me out of their life as I'm doing my best to be open in communication and use the tools and to take full responsibility for my own emotions and inviting others to take responsibility for theirs. And the fact of the matter is some people don't want to be invited to take responsibility for their own emotions. And it's resulted in the ending of various relationships in my life. And I have to be okay with that because it's their choice. If people choose to refuse to communicate with me or cut me out of their life, I don't have the power to change that. I do have the power to drive myself to distraction and bitterness and resentment over it or let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this work is telling me. Go ahead.
One client I had who was using the tools that Michael Rice has taught us quit. She didn't quit in any big way. She just drifted away and found other ways of getting what she needed because the tools for her didn't suit her. And I felt okay with that because I have had experiences where something just didn't work for me. And I've even feared that the teacher of that particular method or something might feel insulted or be angry at me for not running with that particular method or tool. So there's, for me, I've had to make a big margin around the edges of all that I do to say, this is a great tool. I found it very useful. I worked with a woman the other day who, she didn't seem resistant or anything. She just couldn't seem to use it. And I think very deeply it was uncomfortable for her, or she might have thought it was stupid. And to step back and allow that and trust God to take her where she needs to go and watch my own fix-it urge, which is always overblown. I've got it and I can give it to you. I'm like a missionary in the kind that I don't like at all, you know. So there's been a lot of interesting things, but the fact that you add that clause into your introduction to the tools is a very forgiving thing to do, very helpful to me.
Well, I'm glad you think so. It's for me, it's just a matter of trying to stay as honest as possible. And you know, there's all kinds of teachers that will say this. One of the most recent that I ran across was Matt Kahn, and he gave a big, long talk, and probably he wove this message through several of his presentations, and it was basically, please don't pretend to be better off than you are. Whether that's loving or spiritual or forgiving, don't pretend. If you're in a rage, be honest about your rage. If you're stuck and having difficulty using the tools, be honest about that. If you're in sadness, be honest about that. Because there are few things that will keep me more stuck than pretending to be further along than I am. Michael Rice gives this talk about the it's not the laws of living, but it's something about the rules of life and or the game of life and how to play it or something. And, you know, basically he says, look, this is a roadmap that any of us can use when we get stuck to figure out our way back to where we want to be. And there's the upper path and there's the lower path. And when something happens, here's what the upper path approach would look like and here's what the lower path approach should look like. It's the talk he gives that has more words on the board than any other talk. The Circle of Life and How to Play It, I think, is the name of his DVD.
Okay.
And it's just, the board is just jammed with stuff, but he starts in the center of the board on the left, and he says, now when an event happens and we create a perception of it, if we take the higher path, it looks like this, and take the lower path, it looks like this. And once we've done that first step in the higher path, we can go to the next. If we take the lower path, here's what that looks like. The bottom line is, at any point in time, when I think I'm done, I am finished in my growth, and I'm stuck there. He says, you know, I'd rather be on step five on the 100-step ladder to enlightenment. I'd rather be on step five and know I'm on step five with 95 more to go than to be on step 85 or 90 and think I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
Because the person who's at step 85 and thinks they're done is worse than staying at step 85. They're actually backsliding. And they're thinking that they're far more advanced than they are. And that's the message from Matt Kahn's work and so many others. But so, you know, that's the essence of that comment that you hear in the introduction, is that this is what I know so far. You know, if you ask me today, here's the best I have to offer. It's a work in progress. My knowledge is a work in progress. It's like what I say to people about the two fundamental observations that are critical for me to be able to learn anything. The first one is I take a step back and I realize at my current state of knowledge, I don't know everything. There's stuff about microbiology I don't know. There's stuff about astrophysics I don't know. There's stuff about sewing I don't know. So I can easily observe. Currently, I don't know everything. The next observation I can put on as I walk forward into life is, based on that first observation that I don't know everything, the fact of the matter is, whatever it is that I think I know is only partially true and perhaps even completely false. And if I have these two observations active in my mind as I walk into my next situation, there's the potential for me to learn. But if I walk into a situation knowing that I know what I know and how I know it and where I learned it and doggone it, this is right, I am going to leave that situation knowing what I knew. There is no potential for learning if I think I know what I know. So currently, this is the best set of tools I've learned, and it's helped with a lot of relationships. It's improved my quality of life, but it's not done everything. And there are certain people that have literally chosen to cut me out of their life, and I don't have any control over that. So I'm going to do what Way of Mastery asks me to do in the first lesson and two pages of the second lesson, and that is understand that I'm the one that creates my experience of life. And I'll take more and more responsibility for that until I can rest solidly in taking 100% responsibility for it with each new breath and let it go from there. So thank you for the call. It's delightful to hear from you as always. I will mute you so you can listen to the second hour. And I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love and everything else is false. And I'll welcome Jeannie Rice.
I am on. Can you
hear me? All right. Well, welcome. Yes.
Thank
welcome
you.
And have a wonderful show.
Thanks. Appreciate you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Monday, January the 24th, 2022. And our calling number is 563-999-9999.
3581 and press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael just a moment to get dialed in, and I see we already have hand up, so let's just give him a minute, and we will answer your call. I'll invite you to go to our website, which is whyagain.org, and click on the Start Here button or roll down and click on the bullseye and put the tools to work. Let us know if you run across something that you don't understand. It's what this show is here for, to answer your questions and to be of support. So let us know if you run across anything. All right, still not seeing Michael on the switchboard. We'll get him just a minute. He may be having some technical difficulties. We have a whole lot of people listening today, which is awesome. And welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Honored and delighted that you're here as we get to move to the next level of understanding this whole absolutely amazing process called First Century Aramaic Forgiveness. We're delighted that you're here, delighted to have the opportunity to play with you, and entering this new year with the COVID behind us personally and receiving its gifts and its upgrades has been, and actually this morning I was seeing still an additional in my health as a result of having gone through that process. So delighted to be entering in a space of conscious awareness and moving forward into the next level of healing. And I actually came across a piece of writing on Facebook that I thought was kind of cute that I'd share. And it fits with the whole healing and disease process that we see ourselves engaging in. I was talking to a physician friend this morning who I had been listening to one of his videos, and he's talking about how birthdays are, you know, one of the problems that we have and how destructive birthdays are, i.e. that you get old. And actually called and had a conversation with him about it and quoted from research from a place called the De Courcy Clinic in Cincinnati. And unfortunately, this is not something I've looked on the internet to see if I could find it. This is a quote that I came across early in this work, like maybe 40 years ago. So I don't have a written source of it, but way back then, the De Courcy Clinic in Cincinnati had done some research on aging. And what they said was, quote, and I only heard this once, but it was burned into my brain. Time is not toxic. Time has no effect on human tissue under any conditions. It is the belief in the effects of time that acts as a poison for those who subscribe to such a belief. And so we need to start to eradicate from our conversation this burden that we carry that time is our enemy and that time is going to make us sick and time is going to kill us, because it's a lie. Now, why did people gather such a strong belief in time is the killer? Well, if I start out in a healthy state, and let's say, you know, I'm a child, newborn, and you know, the commercial business industry gets into my mother's head, and the commercial business industry that makes this toxic substance called whey protein and has a really good marketing plan from the folks on Madison Avenue, they might convince my mother that she really doesn't want to give me her immunity with breast milk and go through all the trouble and the mess of feeding me for 2 or 3 years. I just need to buy this whey protein product. And so day one, I start on this toxic substance. By the way, whey protein, if you're eating whey, do some research. I mean, it's not easy to find, but what you'll find is, you know, farmers who produced milk and they took their milk in to be produced, whey is a waste product of processing, you know, this fluid from cow's utters. You did hear about the cow that couldn't give any milk, didn't you? They said it was an utter failure. But I couldn't help myself. I just had to do that while the topic was up. In any event, farmers just take their milk into town or into the processor, and whey being a waste product, well, the people who did the processing were going to do their farmer friends a favor and give that back to them so they could put that nutrition on their fields. And you know, put it back in the soil to make the soil healthy. Guess what? They put whey on their farmer fields, and all their crops died. But it's a big sales product now. But if I do a toxic substance the first 2 years of my life in place of breast milk, then in a two-year period, I'm going to have probably allergies. I'm probably going to have ear infections. Like I think right now, if you look at the statistics, 60% of kids have ear infections. And, you know, by the time I'm two years have gone by, and they'll say, well, you know, that's just the way it goes. You have these infections and blah, blah, blah. So 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, I'm eating this junk food. I'm eating the sad diet, standard American diet, toxic vegetable oils, rancid oils, chemicals, colorings, all kinds of junk. And, you know, by the time this person, I'll stop saying it's me, is 60, they'll say he's getting old and he's getting the diseases of aging. And it has nothing to do with the fact that he's been alive for 60 years. It's been that he's been filling this sack on his back with toxic substances, and metaphorically his back, that is, his cells are carrying this toxicity. There's an interesting video, I think I mentioned it the other day. You might want to look it up on YouTube. It's called Foodgate. Take a look at what the food industry has done to convince people that these toxic substances are edible and that they're actually food. So if you, over a period of 60 years, live in rage and fear and guilt, as the culture would promote you doing, and you eat the worst junk on the planet, you eat rarely something that comes out of the ground, actual food. You've got packages that are so convenient, and you don't have to put time into it, and you know all of that, and they make billions for the food industry. You might think time is the enemy, and my offering is it's not. In any event, this came from a woman named Jessica Young on Facebook. She said, I once heard a motivational speaker tell a story of a sack of potatoes that went forgotten in a basement. When the potatoes were finally found, they'd grown up the wall toward the light, coming through a little window. What the speaker didn't know was that as a child, I was the figurative potatoes in a literal basement. Like the potatoes, I remember stretching my arms out, trying to reach the light coming through the tiny window. In the darkness, I sought light. As I grew up, I had a family of my own. I knew I wanted to build a better life, but I didn't know how. One day, many years ago, after working around the clock and not sleeping for days, I was in school, working three jobs, plus I was a main caretaker of our family, I completely lost my temper with my eldest son. In mid-meltdown, I recognized the look of terror in my little boy's face. It was the same look I'd made as a child. I looked around, grabbed my son and hugged him, then stepped away. I realized that my life was in a shambles. My marriage was falling apart. And while I was a devoted and caring, I was also very unpredictable as a mother. This was the first moment of realization for me. I had to face myself. I had to change. This time, I was in a darkness I'd created and desperately needed light. It wasn't my fault that I was so broken, but it would have been my fault if I stayed that way. I began to be honest with myself. I brutally identified my issues and started the work of correcting them. The process had many moments of propulsion, though admittedly sometimes I feared that I was too weak to change, but I remained determined. Today, my marriage and my relationship with my children thrives. I've replaced impatience with patience, anger with gentleness, chaos with peace, fear with hope, bitterness with love, lack of control with self-discipline, tears with smiles, and resentment with abounding joy. I could have continued life by blaming everyone else, and trust me, there was blame in spades. I could have justified my behavior. Where would that have gotten me? Change, no matter how terrible people around us might behave, must begin within ourselves. We are responsible for who we are, not our parents, not our spouse, not one but us. In order for one to create a functional marriage and a healthy family, one must be functional and healthy-minded. I promise it's worth every prayer, every book read, and every bit of effort. Though your story might look different than mine, please know that in your life, marriage, and family that didn't live up to your expectations, you can begin to change. And by that first change in yourself, your life moves forward. Hold yourself to a higher standard. Be a person that you can admire. And I just thought that was so powerfully written, so beautifully written by this woman, Jessica Young. So thank you, Jessica, for the inspiration and the insight of what it takes to live a responsible life. You know, we do a whole workshop called Communication. Did you hear what I think I said? And in that workshop, we outline a process of what we call projection communication and the process we call responsibility communication. And one of the powers of that tool, which she illustrates so profoundly here, is that if you remember that construct of your mind, and it is a reflection of your thoughts, literally the whole world you think you see is nothing but your thoughts turned into pictures. Perception is a construct of the mind. It is individual and unique to you. You do not look out through your body's eyes and see what's happening out there. Nobody has ever looked out through their eyes. You've never seen anything in your life. You can no more see through this one-way valve called an eye, where light energy comes in and delivers information to the brain, than you could pull the wires out of the back of your TV set and look out that antenna through those wires and look out through the antenna. You can't see through your eyes. Your brain generates the picture world that you see. It's called perception. And when you language as though someone else is responsible for your perception, it's called projection communication. You made me mad. You made me sad. You hurt me. You upset me. They disturbed me. That was painful. It's called projection communication. I generate a picture in my mind, and whoever my thoughts are about, if it's you, then I'll generate a picture of you doing the very things that I hate having done to me, and I'll say, look what you've done to me. And I have no idea I'm in projection. And I've seen what you're doing to me, so I believe it. I mean, I saw it. It must have happened. Pardon me, that's the biggest lie that's ever been told. You saw it, and all that means is your mind believed it and produced a construct in harmony with your beliefs. The invitation to responsibility communication is to recognize that when you use words, your words reflect your thoughts, and your thoughts produce your mental constructs. And when I shift out of you made me mad into responsibility communication, I acknowledge you did a behavior, whatever it is that I think you did, or maybe you really did do it. But when I move into responsibility communication, then I move from, you know, when you did thus and so, that resonated or brought up a lot of rage or sadness or fear or hurt in me. Now my mind, instead of giving me a picture world experience of you doing it to me, is given permission to show me that I'm doing it to me, as this young lady said. literally young lady, that's her last name. When I have, and the conversations of the world, the whole communication process is basically projection communication. I can remember, you know, one of the things we do in our communication, did you hear what I think I said workshop, is there'll come a point where I ask people to really look at what's been modeled for them. And, you know, what gets modeled for us is pretty much what we believe. And I asked the question, well, how many, you know, had the mom that, you know, when dad came home drunk and dinner was ruined, how many had the mom when dad came in the front door that said, you know, dear husband, when you come home drunk and dinner has been ruined after I've worked for it all day and we're short of money and the food is going to be thrown out, that really brings up a lot of rage and pain in me. And what I'd like to do is develop a relationship with you where I'm supported in healing my pain and I do the work of actual forgiveness and remove my pain. How many were brought up with that mom compared to the mom who, when dad came in, you are such a low life, you enrage me and you are the problem in this life, and if you'd only change, our world would be better. And you know what? In, I don't know, three and a half decades I've been teaching responsibility communication, I've had, and I've done that presentation in front of thousands of people, I've had exactly two people who said, I was brought up with that mom or that dad. One of them, actually Jeannie was with me on both occasions. We were on a yacht actually in Biscayne Bay in Florida. We've been invited by a wealthy family to come and present, why is this happening to me again? And there was a young man, this was actually a boat that belonged to a stockbroker, and one of his employees and their family was on the boat. And this young kid in his, you know, I remember whether he was a teenager or early 20s, I was going to say early 20s, this is a very young man. And he raised his hand and said, I was brought up with that dad. His dad was sitting in the room. I was brought up with that dad. His dad had studied with me 25 years earlier. And the second time that happened, we were in Oregon. Was it Oregon, Jeannie? I think so, or maybe Washington State. And I asked the same question. There's a young lady there who was a physician. And she said, I was brought up with that dad that used responsibility communication. And this was a girl whose father had been separated from her. Her parents had divorced when she was born, shortly afterward. And he'd actually been estranged from her till she was, if I remember correctly, I believe she was 8. Actually, he might be listening to the show. He often does. He might be on the show today. But I think she was 8, and they were allowed to reconnect. And he came to be on the support team at Heartland for a full summer and brought his daughter, who was 8, I think she was 8, she might have been 9 or 10, to that summer, was there for the whole summer at Heartland. And she shared that, yeah, my dad did that. And it was a result of that summer at Heartland that I became a physician. And she said, I worked through one of the biggest issues of my life, and that was that from the time I was, my earliest memories, my mother blamed my father for the fact that, or blamed her for the fact that she and her father divorced. And so she had been told from the time she could speak that it was her fault being born, that the parents had split. She said, that summer, I realized it wasn't my fault. And I healed that in me, and I became a healer as a result of that. So take a look around. You know, just turn on the TV. You'll hear virtually every TV show. You'll rarely hear somebody who actually takes responsibility for what's going on in their minds by using words of responsibility communication. Virtually everybody, you made me mad, you made me sad. That's the modeling of the world. Everywhere you look, every movie, every TV show, every book, virtually every family. So if that's what you've learned, then I invite you to take some responsibility, as this young woman, Jessica Young, offers. As I grew up, and had a family of my own, I knew I wanted a better life, but I didn't know how. I lost my temper with my child. I recognized the look of terror in his face. And here's where it turned for this woman. Instead of, "You rotten kid, look what you made me do to you. I'm only hitting you because I love you and I want you to have a better life." Instead of that, she went into and stopped and said, "Oh my God, I'm doing to my child what my power person did to me." And she says, "I grabbed my son and I hugged him. I stepped away. I realized my life was in shambles." She took responsibility and did something about it. And as she says, "This was the moment of realization for me. I had to face myself. I had to change. This time I was in a darkness I'd created and I desperately needed light. It wasn't my fault that I was so broken." And, you know, this is healing process is a no-fault process. You're the inheritor of 1,000 generations of who knows what. And if it's been all about blaming everybody else, well, then this is a no-fault process. But she said, "Well, it wasn't my fault I was so broken. It would have been my fault if I had stayed that way. I began to be honest with myself. I brutally identified my issues and started the work of healing." And that's our invitation with this work, to really face your life. And it's not a short-term project. You're not going to be done with it tomorrow. When I was talking to this physician I mentioned earlier, I'm telling we need to get rid of this whole belief in time as the problem and realize it's what we're doing with our time that is the problem. One of his frustration points was, how do you get patients to actually comply with a change? It's like, well, until somebody has the brain cells for the change, they're going to do whatever's in brain cells. There's no choice about that. You know, I look back at Yeshua 2,000 years ago, and he says his work is only for those who have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. And I think we can fairly safely assume that most everybody in his audience had what we call physical eyes and ears. So that wasn't what he was talking about. He was talking about the brain cells. Sadly, most people won't stick around long enough and do the work required to face themselves and change the content of their own minds. Our invitation to you is to stay, to be involved. You know, the reason for this radio show, people who hear me talk about, yeah, we're going into our 11th year. Actually, another 2 weeks or so, we're in our 11th year. Michael, why have you been doing that? It's because we want to create a conversation that includes anybody on the planet that we can, everybody on the planet that we can, and all you need is an internet connection to be involved in this conversation, and have an ongoing conversation that upgrades from the projection communication of the world to responsibility communication, upgrades from pardoning others and calling it forgiveness to the real forgiveness work where you go inside yourself and you change the content of your own structure and you move through the rage, the guilt, the grief, the fear, the pain, the trauma of the generations. That's what we're here to do. That's what we're here to support. And there was a second interesting piece of reading that fit into the same conversation, and it was called A Duck or an Eagle. And to me, it just kind of went hand in hand with what that young lady had written in moving out of the inertia-bound world of hostility or fear and bringing excellence into your world, excellence into your life. Say again? Two callers. Well, before I go into that story, let's talk to our callers. Let's say hello. Jeannie tells me we've got a couple of hands up, so let's say hello to our callers.
And I did find a quote on the DeCourcy Clinic on a site called Living Life Fully, and I will put that
really?
In there. And they do the same quote. They said, after a conference of medical and surgical specialists at the DeCourcy Clinic in Cincinnati some years ago, the following report was issued. Time is not toxic. All of those who develop a time neurosis subscribe to the prevalent superstition that time is in some way a poison exerting a mysterious cumulative action. Time has no effect on human tissues under any condition. Vigor does not necessarily vary inversely with the age of an adult. Belief in the effects of time by those who subscribe to such a belief is the thing that acts as a poison. To put it another way, there is no scientific basis for believing, as most of us do, that the passage of years automatically causes our bodies to age. And presumably that would go for spirit and mind as well. It is ignorance of the truth about the passage of time, the report continues, that causes us to cringe in fear before the accumulation of years. We need not surrender to age if our minds are sufficiently enlightened.
Honey, you are awesome. Now, I looked for that quote, when the Internet got popular 5, 6, 8 years ago, I looked for that quote, couldn't find it. It's like, it was before the Internet. So that's awesome that somebody put it there. And I'm really impressed that, literally, I heard that at a medical conference about 40 years ago, and that the quote, as I remembered, is as close as what these folks have written. That's awesome.
Yep,
thank you.
For sure. You're welcome.
Cool. So if you would send me, if you'd text that to me, I'd appreciate it, sweetie.
Send it to email.
Okay. Sweet.
Our first caller is, I believe, Carrie. It's area code 919, and not Carrie that usually calls in, a new Carrie. So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, hey there, young lady.
Hello,
welcome.
Everybody.
Good to hear your voice.
Thank you. Good to hear yours, too. And Jeannie's, and letting my dog out of the room. Looking forward to my first time on the radio show, so listening and being a part of the group.
Welcome.
So I was told to press one when I dialed in, so I did. So for me, I'm... joining this program, that's really what I wanted to do, and just looking forward to receiving the lessons. Don't know if I have any questions right now. So,
You weren't really thinking of asking a question. That was just part of the conversation. And, whenever you do have a question, if you push one, that puts a hand up. So I'm glad to know that you're there, so that Jeannie welcomed you. And so we can, let the conversation loose for now. And if questions come up, if you once Jeannie disconnects you, if you have a question again, if you push one as things unfold, then I'll look forward to more conversation. And I know that you're just starting on the codependence to interdependence intensive self-study. And so we're delighted to be here to support you in every way possible with every question that comes up. And if you're on the show every day and take up, the whole show every day, that's awesome. That's what we're here for.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thanks for sharing.
All right. Delight to have you. All right. Blessings. All right, Machine, you had a second hand.
And it is Julie, and this is probably a continuation of our Friday conversation. So welcome, Julie.
Sweet. Hey, young lady, welcome.
Hi. Hi, thank you. A continuation, yes, I'm still alive.
All right. Well, how has your weekend been out in Oregon?
Yeah, Ashland, Oregon. Well, I set out to have kind of a mini intensive, and and I was judging it to be that first I sabotaged myself by distracting myself, and now that 3 days have gone by, I was judging myself this morning. Wow, I didn't accomplish anything. I didn't do what I said I was going to do, and those kinds of thoughts. So I was going to be afraid to come on the show, and then I dropped that finally.
Good work.
I'm letting myself learn and be with the key to the locked gate that I've kept myself in for so long. And so I am in my work. I am in my intensive. My whole life is this. This building awareness to changing my realities to live the life that love can design. So meanwhile, I had some drama this weekend. I was not eating right. I got to observe that. I just I went into a depression. and before that happened, I went into when my inner self wakes me up in the middle of the night, and some awarenesses were coming together, and I could mm-hmm. see where my work was going to go. But what happened in the world and in my relationship is that my boyfriend didn't like that, basically, and because I went into another room to sleep so that I could be with myself quietly, and
mm-hmm.
he has a hard time sleeping because of his back pain, and I feel his difficulties resonating my difficulties. So I was looking at my own back pain, and that's what I mentioned last Friday to you.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So, which, by the way, just from our interaction on the radio show Friday, my back pain really lifted a lot anyway, because
nice.
You know, the truth came in, the light went on, you know. So anyway, what I, as you know, have a hard time, I have in the past had a hard time communicating with my boyfriend about the work I do and have spent 11 years doing since your radio show came on 11 years
right.
ago, and which I also knew that family that you met in Florida on that boat. And that's how
right.
actually your set of DVDs came to me, via them, via a mutual friend. So
that's right.
It's
that's
all connected.
How we got connected with them.
I know. It's really yeah. all connected. And I just keep affirming that I need to stick to this work. And that is where I feel the split of staying in the relationship with my boyfriend, who wants nothing to do with this work, he thinks. He just doesn't have brain cells, which I'm starting to build. But,
right.
You know, and so how do I remain wholly intact with my purpose and my direction that has been thwarted in life? And here's where he and I have similar resonance. My parents got divorced, and it was an uprooting of my family structure and my security as a child. And I was approximately 12 years old. I was around 12 when the decision to divorce came upon our family.
Right.
He has had an immense thwart when his son died suddenly from basically misinformation and misdirection in his immediate culture. He was in high school at the time, and there was all kinds of drug opportunities and try this opportunities in our small community
right.
of 22,000 people. And it reached him, and it took him the wrong way. And he didn't, we believe, what I've been told is he didn't do a suicide. He just did an accidental sudden death.
Overdose.
So,
blessings.
Yeah, and so my friend really blames and has anger that he has been suppressing for a long time about that whole thing. And, but he's starting to trust me. He comes up with where his anger is, and I don't catch it because it's been a forbidden ground for me to bring up. And he'll say something like, if we would have never moved here, my son would still be alive. His family before I ever knew him. And so that was a clue, but it went over my head. So what I'm seeing in all this is that, and this has been through my recent awareness of what kinetic energy is, I see that my kinetic energy from my parents' divorce lies somewhat dormant until it's resonated by an outside force, another person's
right.
energy, kinetic energy that is also dormant. And that's why I had to leave the bedroom. I couldn't sleep because I still felt it there, no matter how nice we were being to each other. And
are you talking about kinetic energy, or are you talking about inertia?
Well,
it sounds
yeah,
like
exactly.
from the experience of your parents divorcing, it sounds like a certain set of behaviors, a certain direction happens on the in the automatic decision system. And I would categorize that as inertia. Something happens in today's world that arouses that, sets that into motion, and that inertia-bound behavior system, that automatic decision system, takes over, and that's the that's what needs to be overcome, that needs to be forgiven. Literally, forgiveness being about removal rather than letting somebody else off the hook for it.
Yeah. Yes. So there are goals to be canceled, you know, that I was surviving with, and they've been intertwined with my life purpose going forward, you know, and just being held back. I bounce into depression when it's resonated around me, and I'm realizing I've
And then what would you do?
Meg-
what would your behavior
yeah.
do? From what you just said, it sounds like maybe your behavior would be to leave.
Yeah, that was in my family, and that is what I want to do. So I left into the other bedroom to go to
right.
come to yeah, pay attention this time.
Yeah.
And so,
so remember,
because I was after
so maybe
all
go
in
back,
an intensive. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, maybe it would be a good time to go back to the videos from that intensive, the codependence intensive, and review the part on responsibility communication and begin to reopen communication with him and letting him know that, one, you weren't leaving him alone. You were in a process, that, and to communicate about that might help him to be able to embrace and see the process that you're entering into and to recognize, because you communicate about them responsibly, your internal dynamics that you're working on, and that
mm-hmm.
you need space and support for doing that, might just open a whole, you know, arena of communication for the two of you, that instead of it being a challenge to your relationship, it actually strengthens your relationship. And as you model that, you know, instead of saying, they're saying, well, here's what you should do, as you model it, he may well sit back and scratch his head and go, wow, I've been dealing with some of this stuff too, and I don't do anything. I just get angry. And that might be the space for him to start to go, oh, well, maybe I could ask for support in healing that stuff too. Although there's a whole other level to overcome being a man, because we're supposed to be tough and we're supposed to be able to handle it all. But the truth is, we're all the same. And if we were, if it was never modeled for us that we can communicate about those things and actually create support in our relationships for healing, it's like inventing a whole new world to do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
it
by
is.
Modeling it, you give him the possibility that he could go, gee, that's really possible. Change the whole dynamic in the relationship for you both.
I guess just what I just probably shared with you would be a great way to start. Yeah.
I think it would be perfect.
Well, I think, we may be able to have that discussion this afternoon, and then maybe I'll call in again tomorrow.
Yeah,
but,
and perhaps dig the commitment out and have it in front of you and maybe share the commitment with him too, that here's what I'm committed to working toward, so that there's a context for him to be able to receive it in. You know, I promise to trust enough to tell you the truth and be true to you, to treat you lovingly, gently, and with respect. You know, I mean, most people have never heard such ideas in their lives. What
yeah,
they've heard is,
you
know, yeah, cool. Have you spoken it to him?
Yeah.
Have you spoken it to him yet?
No, but I will. You're right. That's a
she
great
idea. She never
heard
me to speak it to him.
And, you know, well, because he said, oh, no, nah. You know, yeah, I saw that. That's not going to work. You know, something like
yeah.
that. And so I've been
yeah.
letting him run, like a power person, run my life, you know. And
mm-hmm.
there's the other commitment to myself, too. So that's been my split to heal, which I think in this lifetime originated from my parents divorcing, you know, not to blame them, but
yeah.
but seeing that was a big thwart. You know, and it's time for me to come out of that as just a slap in the face. I'm a victim of it, to being more empowered to say that I want it out of the way, and I'm willing to go through whatever the pain is, or the truth is, just discover it instead of what I've layered on top of it.
Exactly.
So, Okay, well, I feel good and empowered for my next steps here. And,
so
thank you.
My invitation to you would be to consider, as opposed to handing it to him and he reads it, and, of course, what comes out of his mind is going to be what he's going to project onto that page. He says what his brain does with it. It doesn't say that at all.
Mm-hmm.
However, you really being having done the work and attuned to what that commitment says, and by live speaking it to him, there's a whole different frequency, a whole different energy available to him. It's not just he's filtering it through his perceptual system.
Okay.
He gets to receive the live energy of the active intention and presence of love that you're putting into it, imperfectly perhaps, but that you're putting into it. And that might be the thing that changes everything.
Okay, I get that. That'll resonate a different set of frequencies that perhaps can create hope in him where it died so many years ago.
Exactly. And you know, when you realize that these ego structures that we have are inertia bound, they're moving in a direction and they don't change easily. And that this automatic decision system, when something's triggered, kicks in with a whole set of perceptions, decisions, and behaviors. And the tendency is for people in relationship to just bounce off of each other with those things. And, you know, my automatic decision system kicks in and I say something with a nasty tone to you. Your automatic decision system kicks in with, oh, he's speaking nasty to me. And then you, you know, return with whatever your automatic decision system which says, which, you know, might be, well, I'm leaving. And I go, yeah, there you go. You're leaving just like you've, you know, and it just this downward spiral. But when you bring the commitment into it with the brain cells for, look, you know, I'm not perfect at this. I'm working on something here. But here's how I'm really, truly committed to learning to deal with you. I'm going to treat you lovingly, gently, and with respect.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do that. I mean, that just, that brings a pattern interrupt to just two egos bouncing off of each other.
Well, one of the things that brought this up for me was the whole idea of running away from something and running to something. And, you know, that energy is inside me. And right now he is wanting to run away from America entirely, you know, because of his beliefs and judgments and realities. And I'm trying to run away from being thwarted from fulfilling my life's purpose and living my truth myself. I feel like I keep giving it up to another power person factor. And so that even America, I don't necessarily want to run away from America. I want to run towards what heals and reconstructs the next unity of America, you know, with love. So I have that dichotomy in me, that conflict going on, and it's time for me to overcome it in myself, and I don't want to lose him in the process. So I do have to do my work and explain to him the right level.
So you're committed to losing him then?
I know I said I don't want to lose him. I know I said that. Yeah.
So just listen to your speech. So remember that what you speak, the power, you go back to Yeshua 2,000 years ago, power of life and death is in your words. What you speak is what you create. So what is it you really want to create with him as opposed to losing him?
And fun and adventure and discovery and creating a new life.
Yeah. Perfect. So when you speak to him in terms of, I don't want to lose you, instead of that, which is going to resonate brain cells of losing in him as it does in you, as you move your conversation more to, oh, fun and exploration and discovery and life and joy and aliveness, then different parts of that automatic decision kick in and support us in creating a more empowered life.
So,
and
so
it's a challenge to move out of the old patterns, especially verbally, because we've been trained by the world to know what it is that we don't want, and we speak about it all the time, and then we wonder why it comes and bites us in the butt, because we're always talking about it. You know, if
yeah,
I say don't think about the color of your car, what fires in brain cells? The color of your car. So,
so
you know, the shift that needs to occur is monumental.
So is the shift from that inertia, that's what inertia is, because I had wanted to ask you for that definition. And then
yes.
The shift goes to the kinetic energy where I've done enough of the work to have an energy that I'm setting in motion the way I want to go. And it can withstand these other resonances as they percolate up.
Now, if you go back to, you know, if you go back to your physics training in high school, the definition of inertia is that a body moving in a particular direction at a particular rate of speed is going to tend to continue to move in that direction at that rate of speed until it's acted upon by an outside force. The ego
okay.
is exactly that. The non-being mind is exactly that. And
okay.
so what I hear you referring to as kinetic energy would be that outside force where literally I wake up to the truth of who I am and I become the outside force that acts upon my own non-being mind that is inertia bound, and I start to steer it in a different direction. And that's one part of the process. And the other part is I apply forgiveness to remove the root of the inertia that tends to keep wanting to drag me back into those old patterns of thinking and speaking and behaving.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. The forgiveness,
the
between the goals, the canceled goals and the new goals, I have to do the forgiveness work.
Right.
I want to.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
And what will happen, you know, again, if you go back, good breath, if you go back to Yeshua, mm-hmm. he says, in order for you to live, you've got to die, which makes no sense at all until you understand that there's the truth of who we are as a human being that truly is designed to live, and the non-being self, the inertia-bound self, the self that's based in generational hostility and fear and rage and guilt and grief and pain and drama and craziness, that's the self that needs to go. And so it's developing the new habit of continuously going to that space of connected love of who we are, and by choice and will causing the action on that inertia-bound ego, non-being self, to be changed, to change the direction of it, and then ultimately to dismantle it through forgiveness and creating a whole different life. And, of course, when you get two people who are working together on that cooperatively, man, things just soar on a whole other level. You can do it unilaterally. I take that commitment. I leave that commitment. Whether my partner lives it or not is irrelevant. Certainly easier if they're willing to. But when I choose to function out of love, my physiology gets to experience the active presence of love. I get that gift, but I only get to see it when I offer it to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
If I hold it inside myself, I really don't get to see it. But when I can stand here and say, well, they don't deserve it, and they did this, and they did that, and they deserve my rage, well, that's the non-being self playing into it. And in that space, when I'm willing to offer active present love to someone who I perceive that way, that energy of active present love passes through my physiology, through my mind, through my inertia, and I get the gift.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they're participating or not is irrelevant. Certainly a whole lot more fun if they offer it back, because by giving it, they will get the gift, and where we meet in the middle, it explodes and upgrades for both of us. But
mm-hmm.
I can do it totally and completely unilaterally.
Yes. Yeah, and that kind of invisible inertia energy that can pass between us too and just keep activating our anger and our, you know, blame tendencies, you know, which do I want? I want to clean that out and carve a space in myself to move it in a direction more desirable. And then I maintain that. That's definitely, it's more will come up. And so
it will.
But now I'm not in the inertia part of it. I'm in the actively directing kinetic energy and setting those motions forward.
I think recreating your life.
Kinetic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Recreating your life is what it's really about. And directing your life, where the automatic decision system for most people directs virtually everything in their lives, right down to what they eat. Consciously, purposely choosing what I eat, what I do with my health, what I do with aches or pains. Do I lose myself in them? Do I buy into them? Or do I recognize here's an energetic pattern in me that I have work to do and I need to change? And as I consciously, that's why, you know, in the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing workshop this weekend, I had suggested, and I hope you've watched it. In fact, I was going to go back and ensure that everybody watched the On Creating Consciously video link that Jeannie sent. You know, hoping to inspire the group toward stepping into every area and becoming conscious creators rather than just letting life unfold according to the patterns of the past.
Okay, I have that DVD, so I guess just watching the whole thing will be really good. Yeah, and then I'll make some notes on it.
It'll fit perfectly here.
Another part of my mini intensive.
That's awesome you're doing that.
The mini intensive within the context of my maximal intensive of my whole lifetime.
Right. Well, actually, the conversation on Friday inspired me to write up a post for the codependence intensive, for everybody that was in those two intensives, inviting them to revisit, go back and start the whole course all over again, to take all of the videos and start to work on them in the way of the self-study to go to the next level, because all of the brain cells that were built through that intensive, going back to that material and doing it then will open a whole new level of healing and process that's just unfathomable at this point. So you inspired me, and I actually, when you called in today, I actually went and looked because I thought I'd posted it and I hadn't. So while you were talking, I went ahead, I'd written that up, and I went ahead and posted it. So you'll see in the WhatsApp codependence group that I've posted an invitation to everybody to pick up and redo the whole study. So thank you for that inspiration.
You're welcome. I remember a few months ago you suggesting that to me when I said I needed a remedial course in everything, because I was realizing how much I'd learned and how much I was tending to not do and utilize. So thanks again for the reminder. And the tools are not only available, they're powerful.
Yeah. And you got 90 video hours of support in that one, you know, just go to that email Jeannie sent you. There's a whole spreadsheet with all 90 hours spread out there. Go for it.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you, Michael. I'll leave the space for anyone else now. Blessings.
Okay, blessings. Take care. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.
Holding the space. All right, Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, and you've got 5 minutes, so go to your article.
Well, that's just about what I want to read. That'll probably take about 5 minutes. There's a young lady that we've done some work with in the past named Lenar Bragg or Danita Bragg. Some of you maybe met her through this work. And she posted a cool thing on Facebook called A Duck or an Eagle. I actually edited a little bit, but this is basically what she posted, and I thought it was pretty powerful. Duck or eagle, you decide. I was at the airport when a taxi driver approached me. The first thing I noticed in his cab was a phrase said, duck or eagle, you decide. The second thing I noticed was a clean, shiny cab, the driver well-dressed, white shirt, well-pressed pants with a tie. The driver got out, opened the door for me and said, I'm John, your chauffeur. While I'm putting the luggage away, I'd like you to read this card explaining my mission. On the card was written John's mission: to get my clients to their destination quickly, safely, and economically while providing a friendly environment. I was impressed. The interior of the cab was equally clean. John asked me, would you like some tea? Joking with him, he said, no, I'd rather have juice. He immediately replied, absolutely, I have a thermos of juice as well as water. If you wish to read, I have today's newspaper and also some magazines. These are the radio stations I have, and this is the repertoire they play. As if that wasn't enough, John even asked me if the temperature of the air conditioning was good. Then he told me what the best route was to my destination and asked if I wanted to talk or, if I preferred, that he not be interrupted. I asked, do you always serve your customers like this? No, he replied, not always, only in the last 2 years. My first few years as a taxi driver, I spent most of my time complaining, just like the other taxi drivers. One day I listened to a doctor who is a specialist in personal development. He wrote a book called Who You Are Makes the Difference. This doctor said, if you get up in the morning expecting to have a lousy day, you certainly will. Don't be a duck, be an eagle. Ducks just make noise and complain. Eagles soar above the pack. I was always making noise and complaining. So I decided to change my attitude and be an eagle. I looked at the other cabs and drivers, dirty cabs, unfriendly drivers, and dissatisfied customers. I decided to make some changes. Since my customers responded well, I've made a few more changes. I learned from Thomas Merton that, quote, it is of supreme importance that we consent to live not for ourselves, but for others. In my first year as an eagle, I doubled my turnover. This year, I've already quadrupled it. I'm lucky you took my cab today. I'm no longer at the cab stand. My customers book me through my cell or send me a message. If I can't pick up, I get a trusted eagle taxi driver's friend to do the job. John was different. He offered a limousine service in a regular cab. He quoted the Indian mystic Rabindranath Tagore, I slept and dreamed that life was joy. I awoke and saw that life was service. I acted and behold, service was joy. John, the taxi driver, decided to stop making noise and complaining like ducks do and started flying over the group like eagles do. Doesn't matter whether you work in an office with maintenance, a teacher, a civil servant, a politician, an executive, an employee, a freelancer, a taxi driver. How do you behave? Are you dedicated to making noise and complaining? Are you elevating yourself above others? Remember, the decision is yours. That door, once you have the key, only opens from the inside. 2022 will be nothing new if we don't have new attitudes. May we be better fathers, husbands, wives, mothers, children, friends, lovers, workers. May we open and create ever more serenity and joy in our world. May we live more as the love that we are, praise more, serve more, and live in gratitude. May the Creator give us the wisdom we need to be eagles so that we can fly high and create a world of serenity. 13th century Sufi poet Rumi said, love is the cure. Your pain will give birth to more pain until your eyes exhale love as effortlessly as your body yields its scent. Let's join in being eagles in 2022. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.